Hey guys, welcome to the Field Crafts Revolve podcast. I'm your host for this advertisement space. I just want to appreciate and recognize one of our sponsors. And I'll tell you something about sponsors. Like, we work at a company that is in the outdoor space, and you know, we get people that throw stuff our way all the time. And you know, every so often I'll get something where I'm like, man, this is a really cool product. I'm excited I got an opportunity to test it out. And then sometimes I'll get a product that crosses my desk or, you know, lands in my lap, and I'm like, nah, not for me, maybe for someone else. It's pretty interesting with Vertex, who is the sponsor of this podcast. They have like a universal appeal here at Fieldcraft where, you know, I like their clothing. I like their mag pouches. Whenever I go to the range, I always have mags loaded up in mag pouches. You know, all my Glock mags go there. And then that way they're not like rattling around inside the bottom of my range bag. And, you know, I know some of the other folks, they like the weapons bags that you can carry, you know, short-barreled rifles and short-barreled pistols and things like that. Short-barreled pistol, that's not even technically a thing. AR pistol, how about that? So Vertex is one of those companies that, you know, we consider them friends. Like, we see them at trade shows. They're good people. And there's always something that you can find that you're going to use. Now, I don't have one of the new Recce shirts. I'm hoping our marketing department will send me one at some point, or maybe Vertex will. So Vertex, if you're listening, I wear a size extra large, and you can just find our address on the Fieldcraft Survival website for North Carolina. So if you guys are interested in checking out Vertex, go to the Vertex website, and you can use the coupon code FIELDCRAFT, spelled just like Fieldcraft Survival, Fieldcraft, and you'll get 20% off of your order. Like I said, they make some really good stuff. You know, you're going to find some products that you might be able to incorporate into your lifestyle, into your mobility platform, into your backpack, into your hunting setup, whatever it may be. Please check them out. They're good people. That's vertex.com. That's V-E-R-T-X. Use the coupon code Fieldcraft and you'll get 20% off. Also, big shout out to all the instructors we've got on the Fieldcraft team. You guys do the thankless job of getting out there in the rain and the muck, doing all that great stuff, putting in a lot of hours. So shout out to, you know, anyone that is teaching for us on the range, mobility stuff, med stuff, survival stuff. Appreciate all of you guys everywhere from one coast to the other. Guys, please check out Fieldcraft Survival. Go to the training tab on the website, and you can find training in your backyard. Most likely we're in the process of loading up more courses, and you'll find something that will help level you up. All right, let's get down to this podcast. Here we go.
This episode is brought to you by BioPro Plus. Why do our hormones suck as we get older? Our human growth hormone and its derivative of growth factors can reduce by 50% by age 35. And it doesn't matter how hard you train, how good you eat. If we don't have the proper hormones in our body, we're not going to get the results we want. BioPro Plus is the first of its kind non-synthetic alternative to prescription human growth hormone. All the benefits of synthetic HGH without any of the needles, side effects, or doctor's visits. Guys, that's the ad that I'm supposed to read, and it's the truth. But I've been on BioPro myself for a year and a half, and it has drastically changed my life, my fitness, and my health in general. I suffer from traumatic brain injury from years of blast overpressure, working with explosives, and I don't suffer from any of the side effects anymore. My fitness is better than it's ever been, and I'm going to be 45 next week. So head on over to bioproteintech.com. Click on the link, use code FIELDCRAFT for $30 off your first order. Don't take it from me, go try it yourself.
Hey guys, Mike Glover, Wolf 21. I want to talk to you guys today about our mission statement, which is to provide natural supplementation and improve your health and well-being. Everything from CBD and CBN in combo to get a good night's rest, to RUCKUP for first responders who can't have anything with THC in it. We're always trying to innovate to provide natural supplementation, and that's our mission. We want to do what nobody else is doing and provide a full spectrum of options from Wolf 21. So go check it out. The link's down below, and I appreciate your business and appreciate your time. Thanks, guys.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm the host of this show. My name is Kevin Estella. I'm the director of training here at the North Carolina office, recording in our pretty damn cool office. I got an axe on the wall. A lot of you guys have been asking questions like, what's that podcast do you like? Like, I got Rambo figurines and all sorts of vintage hunting and fishing equipment here, and a sign that says, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger, except bears. Bears will definitely kill you. So this is the podcast studio. I'm here all by myself today. Just me and my lonesome and my Glock 19 that's sitting on the table in case anyone weird shows up. But I've got an awesome guest with me on the podcast. This is someone who we go way back, and I'm trying to remember the first time we met, but you guys might know that I'm a magazine writer in addition to working for Fieldcraft. And I'm going to tell you that one of the first magazines I ever wrote for professionally was this magazine called Self-Reliance Outfitters. Now, back in the day, this was run by my guest. It was actually her father, and it was affiliated with the Pathfinder School. So I used to write for Dave Canterbury's magazine. And since then, that magazine allowed me to jump from that one to other ones like American Survival Guide, Recoil, and Backwoods Survival Guide, and a whole bunch of others. But I really credit a lot of my writing to the start that I got from her and her dad. So I want to introduce you to Alicia. And I don't know, Alicia, are you going by the full hyphenated name, like Hillary Rodham Clinton? Are you going Alicia Coppins McLean? Or
I do not. Only on Facebook, so that, you know, people in my younger days can find me, my premarital days. So it's just Alicia McQueen.
Ah, very good. Very good. So Alicia and I have gone back. I was trying to think of the first time we met, and I'm guessing it was sometime around like 2009 or 2010.
So that's funny. I was thinking the same thing. I went to my first PWIP in 2009 and my first war in 2010. And I can't remember which of those two we met at.
It was definitely the war then, because I wasn't at the Practice What You Preach in 09. So you came up to the old survival school I used to work for. And, you know, a lot of people over the years have asked me, well, what was that survival school like? What was your mentor like? So that's the first question I'm going to ask you. Then I want to get into you. What was it like meeting Marty? What was it like going up to that school?
For me, still to this day, life-changing. Marty changes my life every single day to this day. And here's why. First of all, he had a sense of humor like my dad. So we kicked it. We hit it off really fast. He welcomed me, and I knew that because he started picking on me. And from everybody who knows him well would tell you, if he doesn't pick on you, he doesn't like you. So first experience with him, he's picking on me right off the bat. And I fell in love with that. And then I experienced my first plant walk with him. And that was life changing. I'm like, what? You can heal yourself with plants? This is crazy. Like, I kind of knew, but didn't know they were all around, like literally on both sides of the road. When you walk down, you know, 20 yards, you can find stuff. So that was just really inspiring for me to do my own research. And I just kept going and going, and I'm still researching plants, and now I'm into nutrition. And he really opened that world.
And what do you think of the school? Because I tell people it was 520 something acres. There's a 50 acre field. Anytime that I went up there, it just had that smell in the air of like the hardwoods, or maybe that was Montreal, cause that was just over the border. but what was it like going to that school, the outdoor classroom and in the leather shop and all those things?
It was like going into a whole nother world. You travel down this little path through the woods, and it opens up into this big field, and you just, that's all you can see. You're there. You're alone. Like you don't even realize the outside world is there. You just feel like you're in the middle of nowhere, just in nature with a bunch of cool people that have a ton of knowledge to share. And then their little kitchen is so cool. They have pretty much anything that they need there. I mean, it was just my first experience walking in was just like, I'm at home. I'm at peace. This is great. Yeah. Very welcoming to both Marty and Aggie.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I miss going to those rendezvous. I miss going to that school because, you know, I would go up there a week on, a week off, sometimes 2 weeks at a time to teach classes. But really the most fun I had was when I wasn't on the clock and I was just hanging out up there either for like a leather weekend where we're making leather sheaths and holsters and things like that, or just hanging out with you and everyone that showed up. Like we'd get 50 or 60 people. And this is 5 hours north of Albany. So it wasn't an easy drive. And I mean, you guys were coming from Ohio, which how far was that? Like 12 hours?
It was, yeah, right around 12 hours if you don't stop for gas.
Yeah. All right. So,
but worth every minute of it, worth every minute of it.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's about 50 people, but each person or group of people has a whole different expertise. So you just don't stop learning the whole time you're there. You just don't.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I miss some of the aspects of that. Like, you know, the potluck that we would do, the giveaways that we would do. I mean, there were so many shenanigans.
Charities. I mean, they were raising money for the shelters, pet shelters. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. And so many of the people that I met up there are friends to this day, which brings me to you and your dad. Because a lot of people, to understand you, need to understand your dad and understand that connection. I mean, your dad, super creative guy. Like when I started seeing some of the leather products that he was making, like the ass, I gotta be careful how I pronounce this, the axe masks that had like the faces in them. I almost said ass mask. So the axe mask, I mean, that dude was so creative, but he was also, I mean, he is a knife maker. So can you kind of give a little background into who your dad is and then talk about you kind of taking up the reins?
Yeah. So, growing up, my dad was, he was a carpenter. He actually owned his own construction company. So he always was woodworking. Like I just remember him always woodworking, and, we had a lot of parties. So like we'd have an Easter egg hunt, and I remember him carving the trophy for that. He would do like little plaques, like I loved Mickey Mouse when I was a kid, so he carved that, and for all the kids, he would, whatever their favorite character was, he would carve that and gift that. And then that just kind of went into coming into the knife company. He also has a passion for white-tailed deer, so he was always hunting and never had that knife that he was comfortable with that did everything he wanted it to do. So he made his own, and we were just like, here he goes again, you know? And then, you know, coming into the production of all the knives, he kind of got away from that artistic side a little bit. You know, as we started pumping out, you know, over 100 knives a week, it became more production than the craft that he is so good with, the creative part that comes in. And when he retired, he started doing more of the rawhide and really working that leather and just honing those skills that, you know, he's had all his life. But then putting it back into the knives, which is crazy artistic when you can take just like a fixed blade. You know, there's only so many ways to design a knife. You have a point, you have a handle, you know, you have a sharp side. But when he throws in, you know, the rawhide aspect or different leather work, it takes it to a whole nother level, like of creativeness that I don't have that skill. So he still amazes me this day.
So, I mean, the company we're talking about is Battle Horse Knives. And, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, you're the daughter of Dan Coppins, a hell of a maker, hell of an individual. I mean, I still remember when, just for giggles, he dressed up. I think he was the one that dressed up like Cody Lundin, right? Like he put the,
yeah,
you know, he made like a fake wig and walked barefoot and whatnot. Yeah. Total character. But how did you get into the business? I mean, it's been in your family. I mean, that wasn't what you always did, right?
No, I was a stay-at-home mom. So I was completely content just, you know, hanging out, raising my kids. And so he had the knife company, which at the time was Blind Horse Knives, and it was growing so fast that they wanted to expand. So Blind Horse actually expanded into an outdoor company where we sold just random outdoor gear, kind of hunting, fishing, camping, that kind of stuff. And they needed help. And, you know, my kids were starting school and I had nothing else to do. So I got into that, which kind of took me back to my childhood days of camping. So, you know, getting all around all of this stuff kind of excited me into camping again. And I did that for a while. And then when Dad and I partnered and we made Battle Horse, I had to take a whole different job. And that became, you know, the secretarial part, doing payroll and taxes and all of that kind of thing. So Yeah, it took me up to today.
And then your hubby's involved. And
yep.
How did that whole thing happen? Because was he always doing that, or did he kind of, like, I'm trying to think of the timeline of how this worked out. Like, was he into the knife industry when you guys were together and then, you know, just happened to work together, or did he leave his job? Nope. So what's that? How did it happen?
So he actually was a machinist. So his whole family, John's whole side, have all been machinists. I mean, aunts or uncles and grandparents and all that, and his dad. And so he went to college to be a machinist, and he was working at a plastic factory at the time, which is actually how we met, because my mom worked with them also. So my mom met John before I did. And
she played matchmaker, didn't she?
What's that?
She played matchmaker, didn't she?
She did. She tried for a year. And I'm like, I don't want to meet anybody my mom wants me to meet. Like, no thanks. Then I met him myself and was like, oh, this is the guy the whole time. So that factory ended up was getting ready to close. And actually kind of got to back up a little bit, because the factory closed and my dad and John took another job working at a stair company. So they made really nice wooden staircases, and they did that. And that's actually where they met LT, which was the original, my dad and LT started Blind Horse. And so my dad, LT, and John all worked together. So when the company started with dad and LT, when they ended up needing help, they already knew John. They knew how he worked. They knew his craftsmanship. So they just took him right in. So he was actually the first employee at Blind Horse when it all started.
No kidding. Yeah,
I think that was in 2011.
Yeah, I just saw LT like 2 days ago at the Georgia Bushcraft event. And I commented on his fitness, because when I first met LT, he was fat. Like, he was a big, heavy dude, right? And well, I'll say that in the nicest way. Like, he had some pounds on him. And then I saw him at Blade Show a few years ago, and I was like, dude, you lost a lot of weight. He goes, yeah, I'm on the whole food diet. I only eat food that has one ingredient. I'm like, well, keep doing what you're doing, man, because you look good. Good for you, right? And then, you know, like I said, I saw him this past weekend. So it's interesting. You guys went off, did your separate things. You guys, at Blade Show always gave me the royal treatment. And it was funny because I remember the first show that I went to, 2014, you guys were walking around with like a portable speaker. And at this point, like, you've got a huge display, big castle with all these knives, and you're going around and all like the old fogies, all the, you know, the boomer, so to speak, they're looking at you like, what is this young woman doing? Why is she being so obnoxious? But you're like, come on over to the booth. Come on. Like, if ever there's a cheerleader for a company, it's you.
I just like to have fun anyway. I'm not a quiet person.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so you give me a microphone and a disco ball, you just watch out. Watch me go.
Oh, geez. Yeah. So one of the things I want to bring up too, because, you know, I want to talk about all the different aspects that, you know, I appreciate with your company and everything that you guys do. And getting back to that original camp out that we did, it was a 12-hour trip for you guys. And you, no matter what, it seemed like you guys would always hit up a hiking trail along the way. And you guys were always into overlanding before we really started calling it overlanding widespread. You know, like, you guys were car camping. You were all about equipping your Jeeps and whatnot. I want to talk about your rig, because you know cars and Jeeps and off-road vehicles better than most. So what are you currently driving, and what have you done to it?
Oof. Okay. So we've got two different ones. We've got a 2011, well, I call her Black Betty, first of all. We just introduced her the right way. Black Betty is a 2011 Jeep Rubicon. That one actually was a birthday present for me. I just drove by and saw it. It's a Call of Duty Black Ops edition. So back when my kids were in middle school, I was definitely the cool mom rolling up on 35s on Call of Duty Black Ops edition Jeep. So that one, she's got some miles. I think she's at 200 and something thousand miles now, but she's the one that we've done more of the hardcore stuff with. She gets the abuse. She's been on Potts Mountain and, you know, rock crawling, and had to been winched out and and all of that. That will tear up your vehicle. So I learned, I got another one. Her name's Betty White. So I got Black Betty and Betty White. She's a 2015 Jeep Rubicon, and she doesn't get abused as much. She does hit the Forest Service roads. She goes off-road, and she just doesn't go boulder hopping, if that makes sense.
Well, you got your daily driver, and then you got the one that you just use on the trails.
Yeah.
Did you ever make it out to...
Then,
yeah, go ahead.
And then we have Lucy. So Lucy's our van. So, you know, anywhere that we don't need to have four-wheel drive or just doing some light overlanding, we take her because she's already set up and ready to go. But each of them has their own setup as far as what we need for camping. We have everything we need for off-road recovery. You know, you've got the first aid, everything. They're all set up. But the way I like to do it, I've went from backpacking where your hammock hanging. I went to a survivalist where I've just brought, you know, a tarp and a wool blanket and slept with that. I've went rooftop tent alley. I've went, you know, your regular traditional tents. And right now I've got it figured out. The last several years I have not had to fix a thing. I'm short enough, my husband's short enough that we can sleep in the back of our four-door Jeep. So from the front seats back, we've made a bed on top of a platform. Under the platform pulls out our kitchen, and we've got a Blackstone grill. So everything's pretty much easy to get to, easy to set up. You know, if it rains, I'm safe. If anything happens, I don't hear anything. People around the fire, I just close my doors and off to sleep I go. So
let's talk about some of the specifics. So you mentioned Blackstone grill for cooking and anything like that. Is there anything else that you consider like an essential camp kitchen item that you wouldn't leave your home with, like home without, when it comes to like vehicle kitchen gear?
So for me, I am a minimalist. I get that, I guess, from my backpacking days. So I try not to have too much. I don't like a big setup, and I don't like a big tear down and a big mess to clean up. You know, I have a lot of buddies that have the pizza oven, they've got the Dutch oven, and they've got the Blackstone and this and that. I try to do all of my trips just based on as little cold items as I can and anything that I can cook on the Blackstone. But other than that, I carry my Jetboil. I've carried that for 15 years. It's a quick way to boil water. So that and my Blackstone are my essentials. Other than that, you know, I carry a refrigerator for cold food, but I carry a little one because a lot of times I'm by myself. And in the Jeep setup, I do take out the refrigerator and keep it out under the Jeep. So if I have to lift it in and out, I don't want it too heavy. So I try to just a few items that I need and have a cold beverage in there and I'm good to go.
Since you mentioned going out by yourself, I mean, there's clearly an advantage to having certain equipment in a Jeep that allows you to self-recover. It's not like you always will have a buddy there with snatch straps or, you know, with like a kinetic rope or whatever it may be. What are some of your favorite items? Because I know what mine is, but what are some of your favorite items for self-recovery?
Well, yeah, you got to have the winch. To be honest, I've never had to use any of that. I've never gotten myself into a position where I've had to self-recover. But I have all my straps that go around the trees, I drew a blank, pal. I always need to go get John. What do we have in here?
Shovel.
Yep. We got our shovel. If I got to dig out and get out,
recovery
what
boards.
What else do we keep in there? I don't carry recovery boards myself.
Alicia, what's wrong with you?
Okay, so let me go back. Let me go back and rephrase, because I say when I say I go out by myself, I mean without somebody in my vehicle, so without John.
Okay.
So when I go out, I will have my travel time. So like I've been in a pretty sticky situation in a winter setting on a mountain where I was like, okay, I still have a half an hour before I'm at camp. But I always am going somewhere with someone. So I might have a little bit of travel time until I get to someone, but then we all kind of meet up and we travel together. So does that make sense? I don't do a ton off by myself. It's just getting to my group.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense. Like even with your daily driver, like we, most of the time we're all commuting by ourselves. I mean, I've got a winch on my vehicle and I've used it for demonstrations. I've used it for, you know, photo shoots. I've knock on wood. I've never had to use. I've never had to use it for my own self-recovery when it's like, it's just me. Like I'm just going out fishing or on a fire road or something. And the reason why I said shame on you for those max tracks is because that's the reason why I've never had to use it for anything. Like I've been stuck where I've just used my max tracks. All I've done was, you know, I shoveled out, I put my max tracks down, I'm good to go. And I swear to God, like someday, like I have a 2015 4Runner, it's got 175,000 miles on it. When I eventually, you know, decide to trade that thing in, I'm going to get another Gen 5 4Runner, like the last year of the Gen 5s, whenever that is, and just take all the accessories and put it on that thing. And knock on wood, I don't think I'm going to transfer that winch over. So whatever high school kid ends up buying my 4Runner or, you know, new to overlanding person buys my 4Runner, they're going to get a nice worn, you know, Xeon 8,000 pound winch on it. But I'll tell you the MaxTrax boards, I mean, for a daily driver, I mean, I've gone up to people and I'm like, hey, you're stuck. Look at this. You know how to use these? Yeah, here, go use them. And then that way, like I've provided them something to get traction, but I never actually have to physically touch their car and no chance of me breaking anything. So you got to get yourself a set of MaxTrax boards.
You know, we've used them once and that was on ice on a Forest Service road. I think we were in February, second mountain going up that. And it was solid ice. Then we used them once for that. But honestly, shame on me, I guess. I've never needed them or wanted to use them. I've seen them break. Well, not MaxTrax. I guess I can't say MaxTrax, but traction boards.
Yeah. A lot of the cheap ones are definitely not up to.
Yeah.
Up to
don't standard. Don't even waste a dollar on that. You might as well just go MaxTrax.
Yeah.
In my opinion, because I have seen a ton fail. And same with me, with my winch, I've only ever helped people out. I've never, had to use it myself.
Yeah. Again, knock on wood. Got so it. We covered kitchen, we covered recovery. Now, something that I will never forget about your crew, and I'm talking about the Battle Horse Knives crew, is that it was a family affair and kids were running around. Dogs were running around, right? Dan is running around. So like you guys had a huge crew. What is it about your crew? Like what's the glue that keeps you guys together? Like what's the common bond that you guys have? Like why, like, cause everyone was happy. Like I would never recall if you were to be like, hey, did you ever see someone cry in that camp or upset? Never once, never once. I don't know what it is. So like, what was it?
We're just good people, fun to be around. I don't know. I can't honestly say why.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun over the years up there. And I keep bringing it back to that rendezvous because, you know, there were so many memories that were forged there. And, you know, all the games in the field, like the marshmallow gun shooters, right? Like, I don't know if you were there for that one or, you know.
I heard about that one, but I was not there. No.
Yeah. And I know what event you're talking about. It's when the one kid shot Kelly, in the chest with a white marshmallow and it left her, let's just put it this way. If you could hit a bullseye on something that kind of constricts when it gets cold, that kid hit that point on her chest, one of two points on her chest perfectly, like right on top of it. And everyone was just laughing hysterically and she just kind of owned it like, yep. And eventually Marty,
happened.
Yeah. Marty gave her an Indian name. Cause we all had Indian names up there. I was the blue dagger for lighting my farts on fire.
I didn't get an Indian name.
No. Well,
no. What? God. Why did you tell me about this? Now I'm sad.
Well, we'll come up with one. I think your father could probably come up with some good ones. But yeah, my nickname was Blue Dagger and Kelly's name was One White Nipple.
Oh my God.
Yeah, seriously. And he would just give those away to make fun of people.
That's how you know he really loves you.
Now getting kind of back to what you guys do at the company, one of the things that always stood out at that rendezvous was throwing knives. And you guys make some legit throwing knives. In fact, I still have I think I have four of them left over here that are packaged up. I haven't taken them out in a year. But I'm going to open them up and take them out at the new house that I'm getting at the end of the month, as long as all my bank paperwork goes through, because they're being pretty demanding of, oh, we need this documentation, that documentation. But you guys make throwing knives. You make axes.
We do.
What else is there that I'm not kind of queuing in on? Because you guys obviously make knives. But what else is there?
We make flint and, well, not the flint, obviously, but we make the steels for flint and steel. We've got a couple friction folders now that you can use to, you can use actually like our tadpole and our tree frog, they're a friction folder that lock with a pin. So it kind of doubles knife and a tool. You can strike flint with it. You can scrape with it. You can do those things with it closed. Then you open it up and you put the pins back in and you can baton with it. What else do we make? We've made Bowie knives, well, knives. Yeah, that's pretty much the realm of what we do.
And I think one of the interesting things about your company, do you still do the send us a custom design and you'll turn it around?
Yes. Yep.
Talk
that
about
is that. One of the big draws that we have. So yeah, pretty much you can design every bit as, or as much as, or as little as you like. So let's say you have a design that you like, you can pick your steel, your thickness, your handle material, your liners, any shape that you like within reason. I think serrations is like the only thing we don't really like to do, but we've done saws on the back of knives, you know, we've done some wild things. So pretty much if you can think it up or give us some kind of a light sketch, we can make something out of it. Which the fun part in that is going back and forth with the customer, because sometimes they think they have a great idea and we might have to change it so, you know, that it works properly or how they're wanting to. But it's pretty awesome when you go through that whole process and you deliver it and they are like, this is amazing. And that kind of all goes back to how the company started. Remember me saying my dad started the whole company because he couldn't find a good whitetail deer knife?
Mm-hmm.
So he made one. So it brings that dream to everybody. So, you know, you're wanting a certain kind of knife or it to do a certain thing, you know, from gut hooks to a saw on the back, like I said, some weird, strange things that you may never, ever find anywhere else. You can call us or email us and we get to work on it pretty much. A Build-A-Bear, but a Build-A-Knife.
So all you have to do then is just get like a piece of loose leaf paper, scrawl out a design, and then either like scan it in or email it somehow, take a photo of it with dimensions
on it. Take a
photo,
yep. Sometimes, like I said, people, they can't even draw what they're thinking. But if we have like our Buckeye knife and they may like that blade, but the handle of, you know, a knife over here. And then what if you did this or added that, you know, so we'll draw it up for them too. So if you can't draw to spec and, you know, if you're not a knife designer, you can just tell us your details and then we will draw it. And we usually go back and forth two or three times sending drawings. Okay, change this or add this. And then once they approve it, we get to work.
Man, I'm going to ask the question that no one likes to ask because, like, nice. You know, we're friends, right? And I feel like I can ask this question. What does that cost? Like, what does it cost on average? If you're like, hey, look, I got a 3-inch blade and I got a 4-inch handle. This is a knife that I dreamt of last night when I imagined, you know, so-and-so running through my dreams and she was carrying this. Like, what does that cost for, say, like a...
So, it's really is, that's a very hard question to answer because of all the variables. But let's just say, you know, starting would be close to $200 would probably be your starting. But, you know, that covers your setup fee. But it depends if you want a thicker steel or, you know, you don't want 01, you want some kind of fancy stainless. That might cost an extra $80 for that steel. Or you have the standard green, black, or natural micarta would go with your standard pricing. But let's say you want an orange G10, you know, the price will go up $20 for the increase in price and handle material. So you can alter, you want to add liners, you know, it just keeps adding to the cost the more you do add to it. But I mean, you can get pretty much the basic drawing in the basic steel and the basic handle material, $200.
No kidding. And what's the turnaround?
Turnaround time, we keep everything. We try to keep everything, including our dealers, under 90 days.
That's wild. Now, perspective.
Yeah, it's unheard of in the knife community.
It really is. So here's some perspective. Okay. Now, there are people out there listening and they're probably like, oh, great. They're talking about knives. I want to do this. I'm going to draw something tonight. And like, I have a feeling someone's probably going to make a gag knife for a friend, like something like Lon Humphrey used to talk about. He wanted to create a knife called the Liberator instead of Liberator, the Liberator. And he's like, it'll be a dull knife. It has no purpose, like a liberal. You know, I want to just put this into perspective because let's say that you were to order a custom knife from Randall Knives. Okay. I was just at Randall Knives in April. It's a 5 or 6 year wait for a custom knife from Randall. And you're probably looking at about a $500 starting price. So you're coming in under 90 days at $200 minimum, but you can go up, which I mean, that's incredible.
You know how we do that?
How?
Here's the key to it. The whole key to being able to have short turnaround times is doing things yourself, doing things in-house. We don't wait for our heat treat. You know, when we used to send our knives out to be heat treated, we would wait 6 weeks. So you're already 6 weeks late, in my opinion. We don't outsource our water jet. We have our own. So we literally, when we order the steel and it comes in, it's sitting there. All he has to do is put it on the water jet, hit the program, go, and we've got the blank. Now they can grind it. We've got the heat treat. He puts it in the heat treat oven. It comes out. Handle material's already ready. We make our own sheaths. We literally don't have to wait on anything outsourced. It's all done in-house. So if we want it done faster, we work longer hours.
That's wild. And on top of it, you're running a full production knife company, like semi-custom. How many knives do you pump out a week or a month? Like, what are the numbers?
We do about
here's your chance to brag.
125 a week.
So 125 a week times 52 weeks. Do you guys ever take any time off?
Occasionally, yeah. John did. We took 2 weeks off last year, went out west and back.
Okay, so you're pumping out thousands of knives a year, no doubt.
Yep.
Jesus, that's wild. That is absolutely wild.
Well, and then you have like DLT. They're a big dealer. So I don't know how it works out, but it seems like we'll get a slow season like on our individual sales. And then DLT is ordering 500 knives at a time. And you're just like, okay, we're back to work. So it just kind of works. You get through that order and then you pick up in other places or we go do Blade Show or... Mm-hmm. The Great American and just keep moving.
And your role at the company.
You gotta know that about McQueen's. They're hard workers.
Yeah, so. You guys are. and your role at the company, you're president, right?
Yes. Yep. I'm the president, CEO.
The boss
give
lady.
Give me all the names. Owner, boss lady.
That is so cool that you picked it up from your dad and you're taking it to the next level. And, you know, we have a lot of people that come through the class with various knives. I've seen a bunch of yours over the years. You know, I've got a bunch of ideas for little projects where I'm now going to have to reach out and be like, hey, I want to have this. I want to have that. And I'm sure there are people listening or probably that saw this podcast and are like, oh, he's talking to another knife maker. I'm like, nah, not any other knife maker. This is someone who does a lot. But one of the things that you're currently working on, and I want to talk about this because we did an event last month called the Advanced Survival Experience. We only run this course once a year because it takes a lot on the back end for us to schedule it, to have all the materials in place, to get all the players involved and everything like that. But one of the things that we did is we gave all the students Ontario 1-12 machetes. Well, years ago, you guys did this treatment for me for one of my machetes, and I just sent in a new one to have it done, which I think this is the greatest deal in the outdoor community when it comes to machetes. You'll take a machete, you'll rip off the existing handles and put micarta on there, and then you will refinish the edge with a convex edge. And I've taken mine to Hawaii. I've taken it to, I'm trying to think what other national park. I've taken it to multiple national parks. And, you know, a lot of people say it's only 1095 steel. Oh, you know, I'm like, well, it's only a machete, but you make it more comfortable in the hand because you don't have that little gap where all the rivets are and where the handles don't fit right.
Yes.
And
there's something to be said for when you're swinging that to not have your hand tore up when you're done, huh?
Yeah. And people think like you need texture on a knife handle. And the answer is, well, if you're using a defensive blade, texture matters. If you're using a pistol in like one of our gunfighting classes, technical classes, defensive class, whatever, you want to have a good grip on your gun, a good, you know, death grip. But when it comes to like a true woodworking tool or something that you're going to use a lot, and it's not going to be for this short encounter, like a defensive scenario, you want smooth. And
yeah,
your handles feel like butter. And yeah, I was like, I need to get a replacement, because I was out in Utah recently and I couldn't find my machete. I had it out there from this past summer doing content and teaching. And when I went there, I'm like, where the hell is it? Where the hell is it? And no one knew where it was. And then Stefan was like, oh, I know where it is. And it was like buried under sleeping bags. And I'm like, well, that's a great place for it. So next time I go out to Utah, I gotta buy a Foot Locker and put a lock on it and be like, this is Kevin's stuff. Don't touch it. Like, you know,
it's mine.
Yeah, this is mine. I'll lick it if I have to, like a piece of pizza.
Nice.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the greatest deals out there is the machete treatment that you do, because machetes, this goes back to Marty again. Marty believed in them more than the fanciest big choppers that are out there. He's like, you want something thin that doesn't bind, that is easily repaired in the field, and 1095 steel is. And he's like, at the end of the day, use a machete like a machete. But I mean, he carried one in Vietnam, and I mean, that dude lived by his machete, and so do I.
Yeah, and you believe him when he tells you this is what you need, because he knows.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a wealth of information, and I miss him dearly.
Same.
Now, you mentioned this briefly, and I want to shift to this for a little bit. You mentioned backpacking, and
yeah,
I'm not going to bring up backpacking, but I am going to bring up tattoos, because because I remember you and your dad, and I think the whole, you know, Coppins and McQueen clan, you guys all have matching tattoos, right?
We do.
How did that start?
Well, okay. I'm going to get through this one. Okay. So, long story short, there was a buddy of ours, who I met. He actually led me to Christ, and his dad was our pastor. And, he ended up working for Blind Horse. And while he was working for Blind Horse, he had made, we call it the Busy Bee. You know, the Busy Bee knife.
I'm trying to remember that one. There's so many knives.
It's got like it's a funky looking. I'll show you one day. But anyways, so he created this knife. My dad told him, you know, he could design anything he wanted, and he made this, and he loved this knife. I mean, it is his hand. When you hold it, you can tell it definitely fit his big mitts. So anyways, he and another friend, you know, Kevin, he's another buddy of ours. He comes to the Blade Show with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we were backpacking buddies. We'd all go backpacking, John and myself and these two guys. And we go up through Tennessee, and we love to be in Tennessee. Anyways, so Matt passed away suddenly in 2012. There was actually no cause of death. His organs, everything was just fine. So it was a huge shock. He wasn't sick. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. It was just our friend was gone. And he had the same, it's a stick figure tattoo, or stick figure backpacking tattoo. So he had tattooed that on his leg. And when he passed, I loved it. It was just simple. It was just, I don't know, I just love that tattoo of his. So we all decided to get matching ones. Well, my dad, the one that you'll see on his arm, his forearm, he actually has Matt's face, because Matt had a big old beard. I turned mine into a girl, so it's just kind of a little feminine, but it's my backpacking buddy. But dad's is the actual face. So it represents a good friend of ours who we lost suddenly. And he was a part of Blind Horse. And like I said, he designed the Busy Bee. And some pretty great history there.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it's awesome that you're able to remember a great friend. That's not the only tattoo you have. You have how many?
No, I don't know at this point. I have a lot. But they all mean something, except for one. I have one tattoo that doesn't mean anything, but all the other ones they have, they're for my friends or for my family or things that I love. So
I don't have a single tattoo. I don't know if
let's work on that.
No, see, I don't know if I would ever get one, you know, because
come on.
Like, obviously, like, I would love to get, and people have asked me, like, hey, would you ever get a tattoo? And it's like, well, maybe I would get the Wilderness Learning Center logo, you know? Maybe.
I was going to say Battle Horse, but yeah, we'll go with that. Yep.
So maybe I would get the Wilderness Learning Center logo. Maybe I would get a SIOC logo because I've trained in SIOC for years. Maybe.
Is it just because you don't want the permanent aspect, or like you just, are you afraid of needles?
Oh, I'm not afraid of needles. I'm so indecisive. You know what I mean? Like I like one thing one day and then I'm into another hobby another day. And it's like, yeah. I would probably be like, damn it. I got that there. Maybe I should have gotten it here. And like, you know what I mean? Like I probably would be more mad at myself than the tattoo artist or whoever did it. But, no,
I could see that.
I just don't know what I would get. So I don't know, but I guarantee there are people out there that are listening that are like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about getting a tattoo. Do you have any tattoo regrets or do you have any tattoo buying advice?
I do. So first of all, I have one tattoo that, like I said, one doesn't mean anything. I was a terrible teenager. We'll start with that. Okay. So here I am, picture this, 14 years old at a house party. and somebody breaks out a tattoo gun and I don't know who, but somebody also had the great idea. We should all get a party dot. Don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's an Ohio thing. Maybe. I don't know. A party dot. So you just get like a tiny little dot. Like it's very not noticeable, almost like a mole or a freckle.
Okay.
Okay. So I choose my lower back because, you know, that's not visible and that's not on my arms or my face or my legs or anywhere my parents will see, right? So I get this party dot, which ends up like a party dash. Okay. So, well, that looks silly. So why don't we cover that with, let's just turn it into a heart. So about a nickel size black heart was tattooed on my lower back. So as I get older, of course, I did get caught. It was not good. My parents were not happy. I got a little bit older, old enough to get a tattoo. And I said, well, I'm going to have that covered with something. So I go in and I pick just a sun, like the old 90s when you would draw a sun and it kind of looks like waves that just keep going around and around, you know, until it makes a sun. Yeah, one of those right over top of that black heart. So now there's a sun and with a black heart in the middle.
Okay.
Then into my mid-20s, I'm like, well, this is silly. So I've had it covered four times. It's now a big flower. So my advice, don't get a tattoo unless you know, like, this, I want this so bad. If you don't know, like you're saying, I don't know, and I don't know what I would get. Nope, don't do it. Don't do it. Because you will regret it.
That's pretty interesting. You've probably seen the movie We're the Millers, right? With No Regrets.
Yes.
No Regrets.
No Regrets.
Not even one letter?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I also wait until your later 20s because you don't know who the heck you are if you're under 28. You don't know who you are yet.
I'm wondering, like, because, I mean, you're 14, guy or girl, you're still growing. You're not into like your adult form yet. So, I mean, I'm wondering, like they always say, like when you're an adult and you get older, your tattoo will like morph into something as your skin sags and whatnot. But like as a kid, if you get younger and you grow, like I'm totally naive to this. Like, does it stretch out the tattoo if like you get taller or?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, yes, all of that. Exactly. So that's why I say to like 28. So I have the blind horse tattoo on my inner ankle and it still looks great. Like the colors, because listen, I take care of myself. Okay. So it's not old and saggy, but what is happening is in between the B, the H and the K, where there was a pretty significant gap. Mm-hmm. It's now not so much of a gap. So it's almost like the color, like it's bleeding together. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it looks all right. But if there was any less of a gap, which 10 more years, I don't care what it looks like. Cause you know, I'll be 50. Nobody cares what I look like at that point. Right.
And now correct me if I'm wrong and maybe I'm assuming this, but you're a grandmother, aren't you?
Yes.
You're a very young grandmother.
I am. Yeah, I was 19 when we had our first son, and he was the same when he had her. And I'm going to be a grandma again.
Really?
So we've got one on the way.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yep, our youngest son is now going to have one. It's also a little girl, and she is due on New Year's Day.
What was it like going from mother status to grandmother status?
Okay. So there was two different things that happened. There was the initial being told that you're going to be a grandma. So that was a whirlwind of emotions. Like I was like, I'm not even 40 yet. I won't be 40 till November. Like, but just pure joy. Like I didn't think you could love somebody else's kids more than your own. It is a thing. You can, because let me tell you, you put my boys next to this little girl, I'm going to choose her every single time. I'm going to just, she is so wonderful. It's the greatest. And I get to babysit. So I'm the babysitter. So I have her every day. And we have a good old time, even though she's becoming a pappy's girl now. But that's okay. She'll come back around.
Wow. So you're going to have two grandkids, and there's a potential then, I mean, I
for fourth gen.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, you could be a great, great grandmother by, I don't know, 52, 53, 54.
Right? So,
like let's assume that your grandkids make some maybe not so wise decisions, and maybe they're a little careless. You could be a great grand, like you could be a great, great, great grandmother.
That would be awesome. Well, let's not go that far.
I know. We're not going to go that far.
Jeez.
You've already turned 40.
I'm struggling in that. Okay. Wow. Now you're making me a great, great, great.
Yeah. I just watched the Stallone documentary on Netflix. And, you know, he said, yeah, when you're up to age 40, you know, life gives you things. And then from age 40 on, it starts taking things away. And, you know, it just hit me. I just watched it. Yeah. Well, it's kind of true. Like, I just started watching it last night and I saw that, or I heard that line, and you know, it's so true. Like a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to live to be 100. Well, the reality is we live to about 80. So, you know, you got to think about it this way. Like when they say you're over the hill, I get it. Now, the wild part is that they're saying that kids that are born now are likely to live to 110, 120 with modern medicine and, you know, all the products that they're putting in food and whatnot, which blows my mind living to
that age. I don't believe any of that part.
I don't know. I mean, you think about it, like 200 years ago, I would be an elderly man at age 43 already. You know, people were living to 50 and they're like, oh, they live to a ripe old age. Well, I just saw someone the other day and they're like, yeah, I'm 50 years old. And I'm like, this dude is in better shape than a 25-year-old, you know? So
oh, for sure.
So maybe
well,
there's
and that's
something.
Me. I'm in better shape now than I was in my 20s, but I've made lifestyle changes. Also reading a book called Blue Zone.
What's
now
that?
This book is, huh?
What's Blue Zone?
So it's a book about several different countries within the world where they have very high numbers of people that are healthy, living and over 100 years old or 100 or over. And so they're comparing like their lifestyles, their food, like their daily exercise and trying to figure out like, what do they all have in common? Why are they living like healthy lives over 100? But interestingly, one of the beliefs is that a lot of them babysit their grandkids.
And so
I'm like, I'm reading it going, yeah, I'm gonna live to 100. I'm watching my grandkids.
I better get
and the other one's laughter. They say that they all have a sense of humor so far. I'm only halfway through the book, but it's interesting. I'm like, yeah, Kevin, I'm living to 100.
Yeah,
I'll be happy at 100.
I would definitely say so. So, I mean, one of the things that you just touched upon when you're talking about the tattoo and something that I want to bring up, because I don't think enough people talk about this aspect of life, is faith. Right. And, mm-hmm. you know, I know that you and your dad, your dad was amazing every time I talked to him. And, you know, I miss talking to him. Hopefully I'll see him at some point soon. But you guys were always very, very open about your faith and worshiping together and whatnot. And if you read a book like Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez, he said that the reason why a lot of people survive through emergencies is because they maintain faith. And he said, it doesn't matter if you are religious or not, you have to believe in something. So
yeah,
what is it that is like the faith that you believe in? Like what is it that keeps you driving on that, you know, like in times when you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get through this. Like, where do you go mentally or spiritually to kind of like push through?
Well, to be honest, my like growing up, I never had went to church, nothing, never heard of it, didn't understand it until 9/11. When 9/11 happened, I was at our local fair, and at the time we were raising white-tailed deer. So my dad had us set up at the fair showing the deer. That's where I met my pastor, and that's where I met, like, on 9/11, as I like, we had just heard about the Twin Towers coming down, and he was one of the next people through to see the deer. And of course, we talked about it and talked about faith, and I'm like, I don't even know what that is. So up until that point, I had just been running amok. I was a terrible teenager. I was just on a terrible path. And he invited me to church, and then I invited my parents, and we all started going. And it took me a little bit because I had a hard time believing in something I couldn't see, and I couldn't, you know, I just didn't know enough about it and know what faith was. I didn't feel it. And then slowly it just started growing on me. And if you've ever had your own business or helped someone who does, you know, the struggles. There are struggles financially with employees, with there's just things left and right that can and will happen. And if I didn't have that faith, just that trust that up until this point, you've gotten through everything that has happened. You've gotten to the other side of. What are you so afraid of? You just tie your boots a little tighter and you work a little harder. But there are days where you feel defeated. And that's when I find somebody to talk to. Like, I have a girlfriend. She's, Brooke.
Mm-hmm.
She's a pretty great Christian too. And, you know, just having somebody else to talk to about it and to be able to relate. And, you know, because everybody goes through things and trials, and some are worse than others. And I can tell you, I lived 18 years without faith, without God, and I would never live another day. Life hasn't always been easy because of it, but I've always felt like I wasn't alone. I have always just got this sense of you can do it, you know, when I've had to. And look at us, you know, I'm always fed. My kids are always taken care of. We're always, you know, our health is good. So it works, you know.
I think it's important, you know, just to, you know, kind of ground it, even for the people who aren't necessarily spiritual. I think it's important just to kind of ground yourself every single day, first thing in the morning, end of the night. Like, what are you thankful for? Because it's so easy to say, you know, I wish I made $5,000 more, or I wish I made 10 grand more, or I wish I had that car, or I wish I wasn't this, or I wish I had that. Like, it's so easy to constantly obsess over what you don't have, versus thinking about like, damn, I am so freaking lucky because I'm still standing, you know?
Yeah.
And I always say, because my dad raised me this way. My dad was like, look, when you wake up in the morning, be thankful you can see. When you wake up in the morning, be thankful that you can walk to the sink and brush your teeth. Like, he always, even though like my dad was a doctor for 58 years, and I mean, he's 84 years old now, and he just retired, like super, super religious guy himself. He goes to mass like 3 times a week, Portuguese, Spanish, and English mass. He doesn't even fully speak Portuguese, but he was always someone who said, look, you know, you're living a very comfortable life, but recognize that you should be thankful for the little things in life, the things that you forget about because you're obsessing over all this other stuff. And it's so true. Like, if you just go through life with this rat race where it's like, well, what can I get next? What can I get next? It's like the next shiny thing versus, how about focusing on what matters the most in your life, which is your health? How about your friends? How about, you know, what you're capable of doing versus what you want to do? Like, if you're able to improve someone's life, it's freaking awesome. Do it. And I'll tell you, like, last year with everything that happened with my mom and, you know, my dad getting sick and whatnot, like, faith definitely helped me push through the hardest times. So I love the fact that you have something to hold on to like that. So
absolutely.
So I gotta ask that question because we're coming towards an hour here, believe it or not. We've been talking for an hour. And you know what the fun thing is? And this is something that it doesn't feel like it because like we've known each other since 2009, 2010. And I feel like whenever I'm at Blade Show or at any of these trade shows and I bump into you, like we could talk forever, but there's only so many hours in the day and I have work to do. You have customers to talk to and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that's one of the fun things, and I consider you a true friend because we can just pick up our conversation at any time. And it's like, we haven't been apart for a year or two or whatever.
Yeah. Do you remember that time at war when you took my scarf off of my neck and you're like, want to see something? I said, yeah. And you tied my hands up and wrapped me up like I couldn't move. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You were so cool in my head from that point on.
Yeah. Let's just clarify that for the audience and for John and for John who's listening, because he was there. But I mean, for anyone else, like we're not talking in any weird way or anything like 50 shades of bushcraft, you know. So we're talking about Alicia had a scarf and I had just got done doing a block of instruction with one of my instructors on the sarong techniques of Filipino martial arts. And I was like, watch this, Alicia, throw a punch at me. And I did like a basic wrap and I'm like, now throw the cross. And I wrapped her up and then I let go with one hand and I like put it over her head. And she's like, what the hell is this? I love teaching the sarong. People don't realize, like, I've been hit with rattan sticks. It hurts, but I've also been choked with rattan sticks and that hurts. But no choke is tighter than a sarong or a mulong. They're two different types of cloths. No choke is tighter than that, in my opinion, to this day. And not only that, there's a you can call it a submission if you want, but it's really to blind your opponent. There's a way of wrapping it around their temples and their eyes. It's the most painful experience I've ever felt as an uki, which is like the person that, you know, receives the demonstration in front of the crowd. I've never felt pain like that in my life. But the minute that, you know, I tapped, I you know, said tap, 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 pain was gone. So if anyone wants to feel that or see that, I'll demonstrate it on a survival class. But just make sure you sign the waiver.
I want to see it.
Yeah. I gotta ask the question though, because we are coming up on the podcast kind of wrap time here. Where are you guys going as a company? Because you've always been expanding and I know you and I know the nature of the company. I know that you're going to, you know, continue to find new markets and new people, like whether it's sportsmen to kind of honor the fact that like your dad wanted the perfect whitetail knife. Well, maybe you're going to the fishing market, or maybe you go back into the overlanding space, or maybe you make knives for your grandkids. Like what would be like the perfect grandkid knife to say, you know what, my grandmother thought of this when I was born and I got it when I turned 18. Like, where are you guys going as a company?
That would be cool. So it's kind of been interesting. Small business, you never know what's going to happen, right? So my dad, when he started this company, like the company part, his end goal was to have a place for his grandkids to have a job if they wanted one, or be part of something if they wanted. And through that, you know, our boys have both taken to it. So we've got that second generation. So with that, John's brother, Matt, he was with us, I don't know, 6 years, I think. And we had one goal in mind. And now he actually left us right before Blade Show. Told you about the machinist. Mm-hmm. Well, John's dad owns a machine shop and he needed him. And so he jumped ship and went to go help him in the machine shop, which is fine. So that kind of took him out. So it's just John and the boys. And so they're kind of living right now, trying to decide where to go, because now it's went from what we thought was going to be John and I to now we have our boys to think about. So it's kind of figuring out where they want to go, because, you know, in the next 20 years, I plan on not necessarily being around so much, like, you know, approaching into the retired life, maybe. So we recently actually just kind of talked about that. And we were like, we got to include them into the future of this, which also included our daughter-in-law. Like, is this something, because she makes our sheaths? Is this what you want to do? And they do. So they have a lot. We would like to be in more stores and have more dealers, obviously, just to get more knives out there. So that's still being worked on, you know, including the next generation into the decisions and kind of altering what we thought we were going to do into what they want to do, too. But my thoughts for our store, I want to, if this ever pans out, it would be great. I want to make it easier for people who want to learn how to camp or want to camp and don't have the gear. I want them to be able just to come and to rent a tent or rent a kayak or a fire pit, because we have several state parks and camp spots around us. But you know how expensive it is to go camping. We have people all the time. They're like, oh, we have four kids. You know, by the time you buy a tent big enough for that and sleeping bags for everybody, you know, you're thousands of dollars in. So that just kept hitting me. And it still is bothering me that more people could camp if they didn't have to invest so much. Does that make sense? Like,
it does. It does. And
I think just come and rent a weekend worth, and we could even set it up for them or teach them how to make fires and bring more people to the outdoor world is kind of my goal personally.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because, you know, the cost for admission the price of admission for a lot of people with outdoor equipment, it's like, you're going to be spending a few hundred dollars on a good tent. You're going to be spending a couple hundred dollars probably on a good sleeping bag. And, you know, next thing you know, you're spending, I mean, the joke is you're spending thousands of dollars to pretend that you're homeless.
Yeah. Right? I've heard it too. Yep.
You know, so the whole thing
so
is
accurate.
So the whole thing is that you, you know, we want to make it available for everyone, but you know, how do you do that where someone can try it the same way that like you can rent skis when you go skiing? You know,
yes.
So I love that idea. I'm all for it. And I'm happy to put you in contact with a few tent makers who might be able to help out there.
Well, even like Salt Fork State Park, they have an archery range. And we've had people coming into our store looking for a bow and arrow. And, you know, I've had people with money and people without it, like, looking, how much are they? And I'm like, well, real bow and arrows are not cheap, you know. But if you had one to rent, now you have this family doing an outdoor activity that they'll never do again. You know, this particular family, I guess, they were from Akron in the city, and they came down and wanted to shoot a bow and arrow, but there wasn't anywhere, you know, they're not going to go buy four bow and arrows or even one, but they would have rented some.
Right.
And actually got to do the activity. So yeah, it just keeps hitting me that that's the way I need to go. I have a big soft spot for kids and getting kids outside. And I want to see more of it.
Yeah, I agree. So we got a lot we could continue talking about, but I'm happy that you guys are continuing to expand. I'm really excited to see where that goes. For now, if people want a custom machete, or if they want to check out your line, or if they want to get some cool leather work or custom kydex or anything like that, how do people get in touch with you? How do they get to the company website, and where can they follow all the things that, you know, Battle Horse is doing?
Sure. Yeah. So we have our website, which is going to give you most of all that information, battlehorseknives.com, and that's KNIVES.com. You'd be surprised how many say KNIFES. So battlehorseknives.com. Through there, you can shop for stuff that we have available now. You can customize stuff on there. But if you do want a full custom, you make it up, you can email us at info@battlehorseknives.com. And we're on all the social media. So we've got the Instagram, Facebook. But if you do have Facebook, don't only like our page, battlehorseknives.com, but we also have Battle Horse Knives Roundtable. Mm-hmm. It's a more of a private group, but that's where you'll see secondhand stuff up for sale, or you'll see reviews. You can ask questions, like if you don't know anything about grinds or what you're maybe needing, you can ask questions on there. It's a really, really close, cool community. You're going to want to be a part of that. So if you need to give us a call, 740-995-9009.
Awesome. Well, Alicia, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast. I hope a lot of people take you up for custom knife designs. And I hope a lot of people will, you know, follow your lead and take up small business ownership and, you know, also your lead and raising good kids and having an awesome time with family in the great outdoors.
Thanks, pal.
Well,
thank you so much. Thanks for thinking of us.
Anytime. And like I said, I'm excited to get that second machete back at some point. So,
yes, sir.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to the Field Crafts for All podcast. I've been your host, Kevin Estella. Until next time. 3, 2, 1.